Hello and welcome to Retrospect, Fordham's official podcast on serious topics. I'm your host, Shina Lagba, and today I'm joined with
Idman Loyan
and Leah Zalea.
And today we will be discussing perspectives on disability and daily life. This is our second time video recording a podcast, so everyone say hello.
Hi!
So nice meeting you guys, and thank you so much for joining us today on this wonderful podcast. I want you guys to briefly introduce yourselves.
I'm Idman Loyan. I am a freshman here over at Lincoln Center. I'm a political science major, and I'm also a pre-law on the pre-law track.
My name is Leah Zalea. I'm a freshman at Fordham as well. My major is psychology, developmental psychology. I'm an advocate, actress, and dancer. And yeah,
mm-hmm. Amazing. So, just two ground rules: be respectful and be real and curious. This is a space of honesty and not perfection. I want y'all to ask questions. I want y'all to laugh, enjoy yourselves, be serious, be kind, but obviously be respectful. So, just a little icebreaker. You know, we're a bit nervous and I'm running on coffee and I'm very jittery. So, one stereotype you hate.
I guess one stereotype that I hate is, I guess, what that I experience on a day-to-day basis is when people look at me and they think I can't do anything, or they treat me as if I'm a child, almost. Yeah.
And, oh yeah, and you too. What stereotype do you hate?
Off the top of my head, I would probably have to echo something similar to yours. Now, I'm not disabled, obviously, but I am a Black woman, and oftentimes there is also, like, stigma towards, like, our own, like, intelligence. So I find myself being talked down or looked, over a decent amount of the time, and it's, like, very irritating, especially because then people don't think that you're capable of doing much more, and you're just kind of constrained to a certain stereotype of how you're supposed to act, but right. It's just very irritating.
Mm-hmm. And one thing you wish you did not have to explain anymore.
I wish I didn't have to explain constantly when people just come up to me and ask me, like, what happened to you? Even at school here, I've just had people just randomly come up to me and ask me what's wrong with me, just randomly out of the blue. And that's something that I get asked a lot, and I understand people have questions and they want to know. And I never mind, like I said, I'm an advocate, so I never mind explaining and telling people what my disability is. But there are points where it's just like, it gets to the point where it's on an everyday basis and you do get tired.
Mm-hmm.
I think also I echo something mildly similar. Now, this is slightly specific, but ever since I moved away from Minnesota, which has a predominantly large Somali population, given that I am also Somali, a lot of people have come up to me, like, in the school, outside of school, asking me if I am Habesha. So I don't necessarily find it irritating. It's just, like, a little odd and also a little sad to me, mostly just because Somalia isn't perceived in the greatest light. And oftentimes those who are asking, like, if one is Habesha, it's done with more so, like, nefarious ways. Think, like, Drake in that one song with Kendrick Lamar. It's not ideal. So that's just, like, something that frequently irritates me as a Somali.
And most memorable moment where you felt truly seen?
I guess most memorable moment for me that I truly felt seen was this camp that I go to every year, and it was my last year actually in the summer in August. And it's just a place where there's tons of kids with disabilities living with muscular dystrophy of all ages. And there's just that understanding already there. And there's a lot of able-bodied people who are counselors, and they understand. So in those environments, I think I feel the most seen, because there's no need for me to explain of why I was made this way. So there's just that true connection that you can build with people, especially if you're younger, that I felt like when I was 6 years old, I definitely needed. So just to see kids younger really connecting and really engaging and just enjoying their life, I think that's what makes me happy. And I can say that I experienced that firsthand, and I'm grateful for those, that experience, and just being able to feel like I'm in a safe haven, almost, in a way.
I think the space where I've been, like, the most seen is during my years on my high school speech team. That was a truly wonderful experience for me, in order to feel like my voice and my ideas and, like, my overall intelligence isn't doubted, and it's a place where I can safely express myself. And that was overall a very rewarding and enriching experience. most of the people that I've met in that club, I'm still lifelong friends with them. I've gotten to travel to several different places, and I've won a few awards, which I am very happy about. And that was, I think, probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done so far.
You said you won a lot of awards while you traveled. Do you want to, like, tell us more about that?
So they were mostly, I didn't travel a lot of big places. It was mostly in-state. So I won a decent amount of, like, ribbons, for example. And I believe at one of my tournaments, I won a medal. This isn't, like, a big national thing, so I'm sorry to let you down.
No, it's chill. And you said you were a dancer. Like, is this, like, a professional thing? And have you won any awards?
So,
like,
I've been a dancer for 12 years with an organization called Dancing Dreams. And I've actually gotten to dance on the Lincoln Center stage, which was absolutely incredible. And I don't know if anyone knows the Meredith Vieira show, but I also got to dance on there when I was younger. You know, those classic awards that you get for being a dancer all the time after an annual recital. But I do sports as well, and I did adaptive skiing. And it was my first time doing it, and I fell in love with it. And I actually participated in the Hartman race in girls' division, and I won first place. So that was two awards that I got from there. And that was pretty cool. Yeah.
And can you tell me more about, was it Dancing Dreams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dancing Dreams is a non-for-profit organization. They're located basically in Manhattan, Queens, anywhere you can think of in New York City, Plainview. And it's just an organization for people living with disabilities of all ages, men and women who want to dance and express themselves on stage. And it highlights them. I mean, they've been showcased in Good Morning America, Lincoln Center Stage, like I said, the Meredith Vieira Show, New York One, and so many other incredible news networks, even PBS at the time. So there's really, it's been portrayed all over, and it's just grown in the past years, and it's very motivational for anyone just going to see the shows, even as an able-bodied person. I mean, it just encourages you so much. It's just really great exposure for anyone.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing, amazing. So I'm just going to go into general questions for the both of you. Can you describe what a typical day looks like for you?
A typical day for me is obviously I wake up, I get ready, I start my day off strong with a coffee from Starbucks, obviously. Then I walk outside the door, I come to school, I go home, and then I repeat. But I guess just a typical day with me would be me putting on my leg braces, getting ready, staying motivated. I have my scooter for long distance travel to get me around to where I need to go, to a class or to hang out with friends, to get back home. But that's basically like a typical day for me.
I think mine would also be in a very similar situation. I just like to vary my coffee. So sometimes it'll be from Starbucks, then it'll be from Dunkin', then it'll be from Blank Street, and then it'll be like from my own espresso machine. I love my roommates so much for that, by the way. And then towards the latter half, I tend to hang out with my friends in one of the lounges because I'm a resident here. And I think that's probably been one of the most like really enriching parts of college because it feels like a long sleepover sort of.
Yeah.
But aside from that, then I don't really have like a very difference in schedule.
Okay. And what's something people assume about you that's totally wrong?
I remember this one story. I was 6 years old. And you know, every six-year-old goes to the park and they want to have a great time. And I remember I would get constant stares, constantly, which I understand and I get. But a lot of the time I would get parents asking their kids to go ask me what was wrong with me. And that was very difficult for me because, you know, they're adults, first of all. Those are weird.
Like, hey, parents, maybe don't ask your child to ask another child what's wrong with them. Like, that's exactly. Not...
It's very strange and very rude. And I remember that was the first time in my life. I knew I was disabled and I knew I was different. But that was the first time in my life where people made me feel just so terrible myself. Because the questions that they asked, the way they would look at me... And when I said I wanted to do something, people would be like, you want to do that? How are you going to do that? Just having communication skills and having emotional intelligence, I feel like nowadays is lost in our generation. And it's so sad because that's such a fundamental thing to have. A lot of disabled people are open to answering your questions, but also there's people who are not. It's just, that's just how life is. And I just think for me, that's something that I've constantly have to deal with. And it becomes harder as life goes on, but you can't let people's words or actions stop you for pursuing what you want to do in life.
In those moments of your life where you were just doubting yourself and your abilities, did you ever at one point think that, like, I wish I didn't have this disability?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think half of my life I've always asked myself that question. I always wish I didn't, because it just made me feel so different from other people. I did every possible thing to cover up my braces, but it wouldn't work. It wouldn't make things worse. But what would happen was I would try covering up, and I would literally look in the mirror and practice how I was going to respond to people's questions at the age of 6 years old. I always felt like I had to grow up faster, and I didn't get to really enjoy my childhood, even though I had an amazing childhood. But I felt like I had to have an adult mindset already. And that's something that a lot of disabled people have to go through on a daily basis. But just in general, certain people have to go through on a daily basis. Getting questions asked about them and how they look, or why they walk like that, or why they're wearing that. Those are just questions that people are going to have to deal with. But a lot of the time, being a disabled person, you get asked terrible questions, and people don't think that that has an effect on you. I mean, it does throughout the day. You constantly think about it, and you lose motivation.
In a sense, does that kind of get all, like, the tension that you hold from all of these, like, built up, like, questions and ignorance, does that kind of, like, release it for you in a way?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even here on school, I've been asked questions. I always threw, like, a joke in there if someone's, like, asking me, oh, what's wrong with you? I always threw in the joke that I went to Coney Island one time and sharks bit my legs off. Now I have middle legs, which is funny, which I like making jokes about my disability. But there comes a point when it's constant on a day-to-day basis in one day that if I'm trying to get to a class, there's a point where I'm so emotionally hurt because of the way the person asked the question, or where they won't even ask my name and they'll just be like, oh, what's wrong with you? And then ask me, oh, can you walk? Like, prove it. I've been asked those questions and I'm like, I don't know if anything.
What?
That's rude.
What? In Fordham, someone's like asked you. Yes. Oh.
And it's difficult because I'm like, I don't even know this person's name at all. They don't know my name.
They just come up to you and
they're like, that was our conversation. I was like, who the heck is this person? And I went to class and I was just thinking about it. It was like, it was funny. But then there comes a point where it's like, it's not funny anymore. Once you come out, someone else has a question. And it becomes difficult when you're trying to learn and trying to engage with other students, but also just trying to build a career for yourself in school. It becomes very difficult. So, like, I just think there's ways of asking questions. But you shouldn't even have to answer those questions if you don't want to. Like, you have your rights. Know your rights, guys.
Right. Do you want to answer something people assume about you that's wrong as well?
I don't think I'm going to have as eloquent of an answer based on yours.
It's not about eloquency, but like...
I'm just trying to think. Like, tying back to the intelligence thing, obviously, for instance, when I mention how I've done speech in high school or how I love to write, I love history, that sort of thing, it's always come off as, like, jarring. Because then people assume that, oh, I didn't think you'd be into that. I thought you'd be into, like, XYZ or something like that. Because there's, like, a perceived image of a Black woman that many people have in their heads. So then obviously I'm going to come off as, like, very odd to them. I'm going to come off as, like, very strange. And I find that also very frustrating. Like, we're not limited to just a singular mold in which we all have to fit into. We're varied.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And how has your relationship to your body changed over time?
I've become more accepting. Mm-hmm. And I'm more confident in myself. I'm comparing from, like, freshman year of high school to now freshman year of college, I think I've just embraced my body in the way I was made. And I think that's very important for anyone. I mean, in general, everybody struggles with body image, or they want things to change about themselves. So I think, like, that's something that I was able to relate to with my friends, even able-bodied people. So I think now I'm more confident in myself. And I feel like even here, even though there have been a little bit of little issues, but I feel like those issues and those problems definitely are learning experiences. And I use them just to, even if I feel sad about them, I use them to motivate me even more, because I know what I'm capable of. And I know that I'm here for a reason. I know I'm studying for a reason. And I know that all those interactions I have with these people are for a reason ultimately. So if anything, they're definitely building my confidence way more. And they're just, like, pushing me to keep going.
I think that there has been much of a change in how I at least perceive my body. I will say, a few years ago, it did used to be very dire. I was in a very dire space mentally. But over the years, I've gotten so much like support and care and like love, and I am so grateful for that. And I think college, honestly, is really refreshing to see because like you're not limited to a small school anymore. Now you have such a wide array of people. And that just made me like all the more confident in how I've expressed myself.
I can also say for myself, I think over time with my body, I've grown to accept it more and more. I would still like to add more weight. I mean, I'm Nigerian and like, you know, in Nigeria, it's the... You have DMs, you know, you have the, you know, you want all of those things. But it's like, I just been like this for most of my life. And it really messed me up for a while. Like, I was like, oh, no, this is really bad. But honestly, yeah, like, I think I like it. Like, I'm okay with my body now. I'm gonna still work out and help it grow and look healthy and strong one day. Like, mm-hmm. I really want to. But for now, I'm not, like, tripping as much as I was back then.
This is just, like, a thing that I put, because I thought, huh, that's very interesting, at least on, like, the African perspective. For, like, East Africans, for Somalis, like, for instance, there's, like, a kind of ideal where, you know, you should kind of be, like, thin and tall and long, and obviously I'm not any of those things. So that did very much screw up with, like, my self-image, especially when I was younger, and I would go to, like, events, and I would see all my cousins who are, like, 5'9" and have no waist, and then here I was looking like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
What are you talking about? I was younger,
but as I mentioned, like in college, obviously I'm no longer in that mindset, and it's like very, very comforting to see like that sort of thing. But I thought that was just like a very interesting observation. You should like ignore the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah, guys, ignore that one. Please.
You guys ignored that I said I was a dust particle. But serious meltdown. Lock in. What does accessibility or independence mean to you?
Personally, to me, being an advocate for like 12 years with the Muscular Dystrophy Association, being independent is just like believing that someone can do something. And them not really having to prove it as much. Like I said, being disabled, you feel like you have to prove yourself a lot to people when you really don't have to prove yourself to anyone. But it just feels like to get a point across, to say that I'm independent, you kind of have to prove those things to everybody around.
What about you?
I think generally in the sense of like accessibility, it should be like everyone, irregardless of like their physical status, their mental status, they should still have the foot in the door. They should still have like the same way to get somewhere as anyone right. else. So in that regard, I'm not from New York, so I'm not too sure on, like, how accessible the city is. But at least from what I've seen, there's, like, a decent amount of, like, steps being taken. But I am unaware of how many more should there be.
Well, like, now, I think now, overall, it's become more accessible. But there's still parts, like, you would go to the city and you would have to go around. You would have to go the long way. Or to find a ramp, you would have to go to the back end of the building or to find an elevator, which is kind of ridiculous. But I think just having accessibility for all is mm-hmm. just a fundamental thing. That shouldn't even be something that we should be asking ourselves at this point. You know, we have all this awareness for so many amazing different groups and amazing different people. But I feel like when it comes to people who are disabled, that's something that for sure it lacks. It feels like you're always at the bottom of the barrel because you constantly have to advocate for yourself consistently throughout your life. And it's kind of disappointing. Yes, we have accessibility and yes, we have people who raise awareness. But a lot of the times we have to still make change in a school or, I don't know, even in a hospital, you still have to make change. But even in a city where that should be known that we have disabled people living in our city, this should just be a priority. Like in Washington, D.C., literally in the streets, they have accessible parking right there. Here, you have to still go around to find accessible parking, which we don't have. We have our permit, but still, half the time, it's difficult to find parking here. And just to have a ramp, just to be out of code for someone with a wheelchair to go up is ridiculous. It should be in code already. So there's just so many things that should be a priority. That those questions shouldn't have to be asked anymore, that they're constantly being asked to be done. It's kind of ridiculous.
And I think this also plays with independence. Like, honestly, when I first came to this country alone after 5 years, I remember like I was literally shaking in my boots in my dorm when my father left. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am all alone. But it's like that we should all have the independence, just not have someone always like pushing us to go somewhere or carrying us somewhere or like holding our hands. So that's like really important for accessibility since we're all adults now and we all live by ourselves and we all need to get around somehow. And I feel like especially people with disabilities shouldn't be infantilized and shouldn't be held unless y'all want to. Like you should have a choice, right? You should have a choice on whether or not you want to have your independence. So yeah, there definitely should be more accessible ramps.
This is where I will admit this is like kind of like a closed off feeling, but since I am not disabled, I am able-bodied, I will admit I did not honestly give a lot of thought to like accessibility in terms of like mobility here in the city. Mm-hmm. For instance, I knew for a fact that like the subway near Columbus Circle, they have elevators and like a few of those subway stops. So I thought, oh, that's really nice. New York is that accessible. And I didn't honestly tend to give it much thought because there, like you said, there's a certain extent to like communication between a disabled person and an able-bodied person. Mm-hmm. So at least with like the lack of communication that I had or the lack of knowledge kind of makes it like harder to really internalize like the kind of struggle that say a disabled person would have to go through on a daily basis just to get to school or yeah. just to get to work or that sort of thing. So that is something I'm going to admit is a failing on my part.
No, yeah, but that's for everyone, even disabled people half the time. They don't, like, they notice it, but they won't say anything about it because they don't want to cause a problem, but in reality, they are causing a problem for everybody else. But, like, even in subway stations, they do have that elevator, but to literally get on a train, there's that huge gap that your wheels are going to have to go through, and the doors close so fast. So still, even in subways, like, it's still lacking, and a lot of people use public transportation, especially a lot of disabled people, so I think even in public transportation, like, one thing that me and my family have advocated on that we're really big on is accessible airplanes. And so far, it's working out. But it's like, ridiculous that was something that we had to constantly advocate for when we have accessible, like, buses and we have accessible cars. Why couldn't a plane be accessible for someone who's disabled when they have to get constantly lifted out of their chair? And their chair is their exoskeleton. It's a part of their body. I've had a friend literally being lifted off her chair who has cerebral palsy. And her chair has been, like, shattered like Lego bricks on the floor. And she's been stuck literally in an office chair. An office chair. And insurance, that's another thing. Insurance is so difficult to handle. They take, like, sometimes months. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And sometimes they're dropped. I mean, they're dropped and they're hurt. And these are people who are disabled who have
And conditions. They don't, like, pay for it or anything, no, I mean, like...
No, they won't.
What do you mean they won't? Yeah, you can't sue for this?
That's a part of
it. Wait, like, I don't, like, get it. Like,
that's
like,
why they have their insurance to work with them, but the insurance takes so long. They're constantly waiting, and they're constantly fighting. So I think that at this time, like, that's why it's so important to continuously advocate for accessibility, and especially in planes everywhere, just accessibility is needed because these are the risks that constantly people have to go through who have worse conditions, who are completely confined to a wheelchair. Imagine, like, I don't know, it's like you're breaking your legs and you can't walk around.
Right.
They need a wheelchair. Like, this is another thing I think that is very important. Disability has no discrimination. It doesn't care your race, it doesn't care your gender, what you look like. It does not care. Anyone can be disabled at any point of your life. It doesn't matter. Even if you're able-bodied now, it doesn't matter. It has no discrimination at all. That's the one thing that will never discriminate, is disability. Anybody can have a disability. So think about, like, advocating, oh, I have to advocate for my grandparents. Like, grandparents are old. They need all these things to get around to be independent. So advocacy really, if when you're disabled, when you're advocating for disabled people, in a way, you're advocating for all. That's just the mentality that you have to have with that.
And how long do you think insurance is? It's less than a year, right?
A lot of the time, wheelchairs cost like $800,000. $800,000. Like, guys, you guys know how much Tesla costs? Like, think about that.
Oh,
it's a
$800,000, a lot of money, $300,000. My braces, like, I think $1,000 each or so, $15,000 each, depends on what brace you're getting. Scooters, $4,000, wheelchairs, like manual wheelchairs, $2,000, $4,000. It's a lot of money. These are not little items. And they're customized a lot of time to your body and to what you can do. And, like, mine are customized. I've had my braces break when I was younger because I would constantly wear them. And I still do on a day-to-day basis. And they would break. And I would have to approve to insurance companies, like, basically of how disabled I was. and make them understand why I needed new braces every year. It's like, when you're 6 years old, you grow out of shoes. You need shoes, like, basically every year to get new shoes because you're growing rapidly. And for them just to understand that was difficult. And sometimes I would be out of braces for 3 months. And because of my condition, I atrophy. In order to stay active, like, I have to be active, I need to move. I would sometimes forget how to walk. So that's very difficult, and it's a very big setback for anyone who's disabled and loses something that makes them independent on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting to the separate questions between you two. So, Leah, can you... Actually, I don't know why I didn't ask this first. Can you please explain to us what your disability is?
Sure. So I live with a rare, ultra-rare neuromuscular disease, which is called scapuloperoneal spinal muscular atrophy. And what it does, well, obviously my mobility is weakened and it causes my muscles to atrophy. And it is a progressive condition. Currently, there is no treatment for it. So that's my condition. I rely on long bilateral leg braces for mobility. I have a scooter for long distance and I have a wheelchair for my house just to get around when I don't feel like wearing my braces. My father also has the same condition as me. Mine presents a little bit worse. But yeah, that's basically my condition. And like what I have to go through on a day-to-day basis is like tremors here and there with my hands. Sometimes I have a little bit of riding issues, like chicken scratch, you know. But everybody basically has that too. But yeah, that's my condition.
So this is something that's passed down?
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have two brothers and they don't have it. But I got it from my dad.
So how do you feel about being labeled inspirational?
I don't know. I mean, it feels good. It's obviously, it feels great to be labeled inspirational. Sometimes it's hard to comprehend that people even tell me that, or like people even ask me that question, because I normally don't see myself as an inspiration to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess because of the work that I've done and the work that I continue to do, I'm grateful that I can be a voice for people who are disabled, especially young women and children. Is my biggest thing is to inspire children. Because I know how that felt when I was younger. I really didn't have, I mean, I had my father, but I'm saying just to look online and just to look in the world, I didn't really have someone around my age to look up to and to see myself in that person's position of that I can do those things too and I could live my life fully and even socialize with people who are able-bodied without thinking they're constantly judging me. So I think that's something that I try to influence people in a good way and to be an example. Just inspiring young people to follow their dreams and not to let anything stop you or people's actions or words to stop you.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you don't take that as like a backhanded thing, because like I feel like us as Black women, mm-hmm. like obviously we're inspirational, obviously we're strong, like, oh my gosh, we like have hair that like floats, we create things and we inspire trends.
I think this reminds me of a piece that I read a few years ago. I don't remember what it was from. Mm-hmm. But it was a very excellent piece. It was titled, "We Can't All Be Strong Black Women." And that's completely true. We do not always have to put up a front of, we're Miss Independent. We can handle this. We're like so confident and strong because we are allowed to feel vulnerable. There is definitely a need for us to be open. There's definitely a need for us to be softer and kinder to ourselves, especially with like the myth of the strong Black women. Then it can lead to like burnout. Then it can lead to like thinking put up a false like face. I have to like just maintain this sort of image that people have of me. I also remember, because this also ties into, I think, medical racism as well, because I think, yeah, there was a study about this where Black women, they were put through like more pain, for instance, because like the doctors who were like treating them, they thought, oh, well, she can handle it. She's a Black woman. She probably can't feel as much. And that is incredibly damaging, even in like 2025. So there definitely should be steps, you know, be taken to eliminate that. But that's just like how harmful the like strong Black woman stereotype is.
Mm-hmm.
Me when I ramble.
No, but that was a good point to bring up. Like when my mom was pregnant with me, this is a story that everybody knows in my advocacy journey. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when a woman is pregnant, they're very excited. This is her second kid. Mm-hmm. She's so excited. She finds out it's a girl, even more exciting. Like, we're getting all the boys out of here. She's, you know, basically getting the ultrasound done, I think it's called. And the first thing they're like, oh, she has problems with her heart. Something's wrong with her legs. Something's wrong with her. They go, oh, you can have an abortion. And I know that's a lot of things for a lot of people. They choose, you know, that's it's their right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of the time something that they offer to people who are disabled. You can kill your child. You can get rid of it. You don't have to deal with it. It's not your problem. And that was something that they offered to my mom. So even not even being born yet, I was already being discriminated against by the way I was made. And that's something that is constantly an issue. And my mom was afraid because she's hearing, oh, something's wrong with my child's heart. There were no things that they were offering. They weren't offering, you can get this medical attention. You can take her here to get her help and get her treatment to see if she can get through it or to better understand her condition. That wasn't offered. First thing that was offered was an abortion to get rid of me. They told my mom, you can eliminate your kid. But thank God she decided to have me, and I'm here. If I wasn't, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you guys at all. And I wouldn't be doing the advocacy that I'm doing. And that's something that I always bring up. And I know that's like a sensitive thing, but that's my life story. And that's like something that I connect with other people who are disabled who've had that same experience, and how they weren't offered the, like how parents are not offered the resources for children who are disabled. And that goes by based off anything. You can make that a general thing, but that's something like that you were saying that I think.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm so glad that you're actually here with us today. Like, no, seriously, because that's actually insane. That the first, is that the first option that they gave?
That was like, the first, that was 2007. That was the first option that they gave. And now, because of newborn screening, now there's more awareness. That was other thing that we advocate for is newborn screening. Is like, it gives you, it offers you, oh, you can get, you, to better understand your child's condition, you can go here and go to this clinic to see if there's treatment or if there's not. But just to understand the person and to connect with your child, but just for someone just to rely on because you're afraid, especially if you never had a disabled child, you're able-bodied, you don't know, honestly, you don't know what you're doing. You need resources, you need guidance. And for that not to be offered was extremely discriminatory. And that's something that was a problem because this is someone coming in, two parents, excited that they're gonna have another kid. And then the first thing they offer, you can eliminate your child.
Right.
You can get rid of it because it's like there's so many things wrong with your child in their eyes that you don't have to worry about this. And that happens constantly. It's still now, even though we have the awareness, it still does happen. And it's sad because there have been a lot of cases where, you know, like a lot of kids with Down syndrome have been aborted because they're saying, oh, they have Down syndrome, there's nothing we can do.
Right.
Just get rid of it. They literally say, get rid of it. That's the words that they use. And I think that's such a shallow thing to do that, and that's such a awful thing to do because it is a child, and at the end of the day, that's that person's child. And yes, they have the choice to do it, but I just think that offering those resources are very fundamental before even saying to kill your child.
Exactly. Like, I feel like abortion should only be like the first thing you say if this child is actually going to endanger the mother's life. Like, other than that, if this child is not endangering the mother's life, I feel like that should be the last thing given. First of all, I should be like, hey, this might be happening. And then giving the resources on how to take care of said child or like a possible way to help this child. Yeah. That should be the very last. I'm actually like baffled that that's the first thing that they said. Like,
true. I know that like abortion nowadays is a sensitive topic that people, even who are disabled, don't normally discuss. But that's something that is a part of my life and about my journey that I have no shame in talking about because there's just been too many cases where people who are disabled have just been discriminated, not even coming out of the womb yet, like based on by how they're made and just getting rid of and erased off, like out of the picture. But even if the baby's endangering that mother's life, they normally would say, and they're like, these are the risks if you have your child and if you don't have your child. You know, that's the person's choice, but I think it's such a fundamental piece to have to say, these are the resources you have if you decide to have your child. But that was not something that was offered. And my mom was already afraid knowing there was problems with my heart, there was problems with my legs. And that made some mother more afraid. And that makes some mother more almost heartbroken because you're not accepting of the child. And I remember when I was born, my mom always tells me the story when they were doing imprints on my feet. And the nurse said nothing to my mother at all. She had nothing to say. My mom was crying because she just had me and she was afraid to take me home because I was sick, obviously. I mean, I still am, guys. But I was sick. And the nurse said nothing to my mom. Serious face. She goes over to my neighbor and she had everything to say. Beautiful baby. Anything you can think of, she said to that child. Like, congratulations. And my mom was so afraid because he had no encouragement. And she looked up this at the screen and MTA doesn't. I know.
That is so disrespectful. Yo, who is this lady? Yo. She needs to stand in front of me. Like, I have some choice for it. Like, that's insane. Like, no, because you don't act. Like, that's like, you can't do that. There's no way she still has a job there's after that. Like, I would have reported her to, like, look, oh my gosh. There has to be a code of conduct. There has to be, like, no way. Say that your baby is beautiful. Say congratulations. Like, that's like, congratulations on your baby. You delivered perfectly fine. Da, 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 da. He's like, you can't say all that. Like, that's so disrespectful.
But that's just like something that, because obviously it was a hard birth for my mother. It really was. But in that moment, the nurse said nothing and she looked up at the screen. And this is where my advocacy started, basically. MDA and I became their national ambassador. They do annual telethons, Jerry Lewis. And that was the last year. And she saw it was MDA telethon. And in her head, she was like, that's where I have to take my child. And then I was diagnosed with my condition at the age of 6. And I got the name of my condition. And it was because of MDA and their telethon and their amazing staff that they encourage people and they encourage mothers and fathers, you know, how to work with their child and how to build independence for their child later in the future, like their camp programs. So, I mean, there are those resources, but I just think in 2007, that era, those doctors, they needed to be fired.
Like, fire. Like, yes, they should have been fired yesterday. No way. Like, that's actually insane.
It'd be crazy if she still works.
The right.
We gotta ask her.
Honestly. Coming back to you. Have you ever unintentionally been ableist? And what happened?
What do you mean by, like, ableist in what sense?
I feel like, because there is a lot of forms of ableism. And as children, especially if, like, we're not aware of it, like, you know, white kids talking about me as a black girl, me as a black girl talking about Asian kids, like, questioning them, like, especially if I'm, like, 5 years old and I don't know what's going on.
Then I think in that case, when I can recall two things. In kindergarten and in first grade. In kindergarten, there was this kid named Evan. He had autism, and I'm not sure if he had something else, but he did have, like, a slightly disfigured face. So I do remember in kindergarten, I would kind of, like, stray away because he didn't understand social cues as much, and he obviously didn't look the same as, like, the rest of the other children. So there was, like, a part of me that was like, I don't want to be near him. He doesn't look somewhat like the other kids. Mm-hmm. I will also say that was very hypocritical of me to do because I was the only black child in my class. So that was very rude of me to do. And then in first grade, I also remember there was this girl. Her name was Ruby. I don't remember her condition exactly, but I do know that she was in a wheelchair or, like, what are they called? Like, the scooters?
The scooters,
yeah. So she was in a mobility scooter, and she wore a helmet. And I remember, at the time, there were a lot of these, like, crude internet animations my older brother would watch, where, like, someone who was, like, mentally disabled, they would, like, wear that helmet. So I internalized that as, like, oh, she's stupid. Oh, she's, like, not as smart as me. She's not normal. And I just kind of carried that sort of, like, weariness in the same way that I did with Evan. But I remember when it all kind of, like, clicked for me was when she sadly passed away. I remember I was in that classroom not understanding, like, what happened. But we were watching Frozen because that was her favorite movie. And then all of a sudden, I started to tear up. That was a classmate. And then all of a sudden, she was gone. And who was I to dare suggest that she could be any different than me? We both loved Frozen, after all. Mm-hmm. So that was a moment where it kind of, like, really hit me. Like, wow, what I was doing was cruel. It was also very hypocritical of me to even suggest, like, thinking like that, because my older brother himself is disabled, but, like, not physically. He is mentally disabled. He has high-functioning autism and also OCD. So from a young age, I was already kind of, like, acting as his older sister. And I still do to this day. Like, if my parents aren't home, well, this is back home, obviously, but I'd be the one to give him his medication. I'd be the one to help him, like, say, you gotta take a shower. I can help you with your hair. I can drive you to this place, that sort of thing. it's like that kind of combined memory of not only her death, but also as I grew older, the more responsibilities I had with taking care of my older brother, which was kind of like the point for me to like shed my ableism.
Yeah. But that's one thing that's a good point, because a lot of the times when people are discriminating against race or disability, mm-hmm. you don't realize really what you're doing, especially at a young age. I think mm-hmm. when you're a kid, it's not, you're a kid. You have questions and you want to know. And I think that's fine. But once you get older, like, I think that's a really big issue. And I think anyone should be taught that at a young age. But I think when you don't really get to know someone, like you said, you both love Frozen.
Isn't
he? Like, you learned that after.
I only learned that after she passed. Because when she was alive, I didn't even give myself the opportunity to talk to her like a normal person.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of missed opportunities when you're just going based off someone's physical appearance. Mm-hmm. You won't even realize how many things you have in common. Mm-hmm. Maybe physically you don't, but I mean, you can like the same shows. You can like the same movies. You can like cooking. You can like the same fashion style. Or even the same singers, actors. But it's not until you take the first step to have conversations.
I agree. but yeah, honestly, most of the questions I have here for you are kind of like hard hitting. I'm not even gonna lie. I'm trying to like look for like a simple one to ease through it. But do you feel nervous about saying or doing the wrong thing around disabled people?
I think... In general, I'm a very nervous person. I'm always wondering, I hope I didn't make that person uncomfortable. I hope I said the right thing. I think in this instance, it's just like amplified a little, because obviously a disabled person is going to be physically different or mentally different. So then in my head, I'm like laser focused on saying the right thing. I'm laser focused on saying like something that's hopefully not insensitive. Like that general sort of thing, because like the fear of making someone uncomfortable is just like, it takes over me at times. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, sometimes I even get nervous to talk to other disabled people too, because a lot of the times hanging out with disabled people, sometimes they themselves are kind of discriminatory towards other people who are disabled. Either they don't want to be around them. And a lot of times if you're in a wheelchair, a lot of the times like they would get upset if you can walk. And just hanging out with certain people like that, you kind of get nervous what to say or how to be around them. Or even sometimes, like, I'll be like, I'm just going to stay in my chair because I don't know. So I think that's just, like, an issue that everybody has in general. Like, just talking to someone, I always tend to overthink and, like, if I'm saying the right thing or if I acted the correct way. So I think that's just something, like, in general that I struggle with. But I think I've come to a point where it's just like, you know what? You only live once, like... I'm just going to try my best. Even if this conversation doesn't work out, that's fine. I'll just walk away. But at least I try, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can also, like, say the same thing about myself. I'm a nervous queen, too. Every single interaction, I'm like, did I say that wrong? Like, I'd be in bed. But, like, for the most part, I'm an international student from Nigeria. And in Nigeria, I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of things that we would consider... No, not we. But like as a whole, people would usually consider abnormal. I don't consider like a lot of things abnormal in America. It's definitely new. And I always try to keep my mind open. But at the end of the day, I notice that the more I try to cater to somebody, the more I like start to feel like I'm infantilizing them. We're just, oh, you're so different. I have to like cater to you more than I would more like somebody else. So I've learned just to like, just treat everyone normally. Like, everyone's normal, guys. We're all human beings. Exactly. And of course, keep in the back of my head that they have this difference to me. And just like sometimes in some situations, I'll have to think about that. But for the most part, just treat them like a normal person. Like, it's nothing too serious. Like, it's not that deep. Just don't, like, it's, we all need to use the bathroom. Yeah, 2 times a day. We all drink water. Sometimes we all eat. Like, all right.
Team Conrad.
Oops.
Oops.
I'm looking to the left. I'm looking to the right. So
that's the wind. My fault. The wind's crazy.
The wind is crazy today, guys. Go listen to the Summer I Turn Pretty podcast. I just feel like. Anyways, moving on. This is a whole other podcast. We're not going to promote another podcast. Why would I ever do that? I'm going to come back to you, Leah, for the questions. How do you deal with being ignored?
Honestly, I don't even
deal with it anymore. I just kind of ignore them myself. Like, if I feel like someone, like, a lot of the times, and even here, like, sometimes in school, people would come in the classroom and they'll choose not to sit next to me. Because they'll just look down. Like, they'll look at my face, and then they'll come, and then they'll look down, and they're like, go the other way. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But even if just someone just doesn't want to have a conversation, or they see me and they choose to walk the other way, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to go the other way, too. At this point in my life, I think I've just put up with so many things, and I've learned so many things that I can't get fixated on one person or 10 other people because they don't want to have an interaction with me, or they don't want to keep in contact, or they just don't want to treat me a certain way or be around me. I can't get stuck on that, because I have to realize I have such a great support system, and I have amazing friends that I've met throughout the years and that I have met here. So I just think staying focused on the people who love me and not on the people who are small potatoes definitely gets me through my day and keeps me going. So I just think I just don't think about it, and I try my best just to keep going, because if I constantly think, oh my gosh, this person doesn't want to be around me because of this, or this person, I have to change this to make them engage with me, then my whole life is going to become about everybody else and not really making about why I want to be happy. And just really, like, sometimes you have to be selfish in your life. You have to do things that make you happy and be around people who make you happy and people who you truly love. So I think for me, it's just not really focusing on that. And just,
of course, that was a beautiful message.
Yeah.
Word. And back to you. Oops. Okay. Why did I blink again? This needs to stop. Like, I don't know what's going on. What do you notice now that you used to overlook?
On the topic of, say, disability, or more so just in general?
Disability, but you can also talk about it in general.
I think at least with, like, Fordham, for instance, I am noticing a considerable amount of, like, disabled people in a way that I haven't really seen a lot of. Because I'm from, like, the Twin Cities, St. Paul, and from, like, a suburb of that. So, generally, there aren't going to be as many, like, disabled people out there. And if there are, there is going to be, like I said, a sort of stigma against them.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm here in Fordham, and I think New York as a city really helps with this, because it's so large and it's so wide that, like, seeing all these kinds of different people, especially, like, different ways that, like, one moves or one speaks, you really start to get an appreciation for it, and also a sense of, like, wow, we're just both here. We're both existing at the same time. I will say, for that matter, it's very enriching to see. Like, for instance, this discussion we're having right now, it's very informative for me, and it's also allowing me to shed, like, some sort of, like, old preconceived notions that I had about, like, how a disabled person, like, advocates for themselves or, like, lives their life. The summer I turned pretty joke that I did a few weeks ago, like, that sort of thing. It's, like, a very rewarding thing to see. Like,
yeah, for sure. And New York is so diverse, too. It's, like, I think it's, like, one of those cities where you can go anywhere and you see every different type of culture.
Really?
And a person of, like, every type of ability. So I think New York is a great city.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I met my first, like, I met someone from Tibet. I met someone from Mongolia. I made a friend. He's from Micronesia. I'm hearing cases I've never seen before. And that is so cool to me. Just genuinely, I'm so fascinated by it.
We love New York.
We love New York, guys.
It's like, you go to Minnesota, it's like, what? Braden Anderson? Kaylee Gustafson Anderson?
Oh,
I'm like, so cool. Who are these people?
Right. I'm like, what? Oh, girl.
It's all like Germans and Scandinavians.
Like, oh, period.
No, but it's like kind of in the really, really, really boring white American
accent.
So just like white people still.
So like, oh, it's period. Just,
yeah.
Like, oh, period. Have you ever witnessed ableism, and what did you do?
I think the only like kind of clear cut version of it is coming to me. This was sometime in fifth grade. There was this girl I was kind of sort of friends with. She saw me like with my little brother a decent amount of the time, and also my older brother a decent amount of the time. And I remember we were both walking out to the front where our parents are about to pick us up, and then she turns to me and then she goes, are your brothers the R slur? And I remember I got so visibly mad, I screamed at her full-throated,
for the fifth grader, I will say that was low-key impressive. And then I just, like, went back to my car. I was fuming. I was steaming. Because who was she to say that, like, my brothers were the arsler? Who was she to say that, like, my brothers couldn't do X or Y? Like, she had no idea. All she knew was that my brothers acted, like, slightly funny. But also, we were in elementary school. Obviously, you're going to act slightly funny. But then she just decides to run with that word. And it just irritated me to no end.
That's so rude. That happens so many times where, I mean, I've literally seen it personally. Where a person is disabled, they're standing next to an able-bodied person, and they won't do anything about it. That's such a terrible thing to do, and especially a terrible word to use. Mm-hmm. Like, just asking those questions and talking to people that way, I think people, honestly, like I said earlier, emotional intelligence is, like, it's no longer. Mm-hmm. It's very rare you'll find someone like that, and I think that's just such a sad thing to see fade away.
I'm going to use, like, Twitter, for example. This is a really bad example. But I use Twitter a lot. And it's unfortunate that, like, in fandoms, writing, music, there's just, like, a general resurgence of the arsler. And it just kind of, like, sickens me to my core that, like, we've just regressed so much that we want to just start calling people all these nasty things for no apparent reason.
I think just understanding and knowing what you're saying and knowing the definition of that word and the definition of the word before you say it is rude. You know, just don't say it, period.
Yeah, honestly, on the topic of the R word, people still to this day don't think it's like something that they can say. Yeah. And I'm like, guys, if the community that it affects and the majority of that said community agrees that it's something that they don't want people to say to them, then maybe, just maybe, it might be a slur. Like, guys, I don't know. Like, guys, if the community it affects is, like, saying, please don't say this word to me, then don't say that word. Like, guys, it's just a word.
I feel like I feel like that also comes from, like, a general lack of respect. So if one says, like, if one is disabled and they say, hey, can you not use that word? Then, like, a person's going to be like, well, I don't have to respect you because you're disabled. You're, like,
you're less than. And I think that's such a, like, I felt that way for sure, where people look at you like I'm less than.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot, and that makes you feel terrible, because people just honestly, they're not smart nowadays. Like, I think honestly we've all become dumber as we've progressed. It's such a sad thing, because like, we joke about these things and we have, like, our brain rot, but I think also there's a reality, and you, like, I know how to come out from my brain rot into reality, and, like, how to talk to people. And I think some people just stay in their stupid mode.
So. Also reminds me of a phrase I really hate, where it's just straight up, I'm not reading all that. Like, we've regressed to a point where someone will say, hey, this word is crazy.
I'm not gonna lie, I use that so
straight up. You're admitting that you are an ignorant buffoon and you just don't want to be bothered to look away from your Instagram reels for 2 seconds and understand that.
Wait, girl, you're calling me out.
Girl, wait.
No, but you're right, though. You're right, though. I think it's because it's been done to me so many times, I've just been doing it back to people. But it's only people I hate, like, people who've disrespected me, and I've give them, like, the time, and now they're trying to, like, come back at me. I'm like, I'm not reading all that. Like, I'm not reading all that. Like, you disrespect me multiple times when I told you not to do so. But as for, like, an actual conversation that we're talking, and then I send you a paragraph, and I'm telling you how I feel, I'm trying to communicate with you, I'm not reading all that.
They just won't respond, too. That's another thing.
Just get out.
Like, oh, just...
Oh, my God.
I don't know. People are just so incompetent nowadays, and they just lack empathy, and they lack, like I said before, emotional intelligence. But there's no connection anymore. Like, it's gone. It's gone. As a generation, we're all cooked, honestly. We're all cooked.
We're almost wrapping up, but last segment... We're going to talk about Fordham. I didn't really write questions down for this, but I also realized it's probably important since you are Fordham Lincoln student.
Mm-hmm.
What accessibility in Fordham do you like, and what improvements in ODS do you want to see possibly?
Well, I definitely love that there's an accessible, well, that elevator for people who are disabled. I think that's so, like, so cutesy, like, in the back rooms right there.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. But I think a lot of the times, like, if someone was on a wheelchair and they're trying to get into a classroom, there's no accessibility buttons. A lot of people struggle with their hands. That should be something like one of those swipe things that you just swipe your hand or you just click it or whatever. Because a lot of people struggle with their hands and this mobility in general. So I just think at the end of the day, that's something that's definitely lacking. But overall, I think Fordham Lincoln Center is very accessible.
You guys are amazing, obviously. But just the people I've met here, professors, kitchen staff, security, just people in general, I love them. They're very considerate, very kind. And honestly, if you have a problem, they're always willing to help you. Their doors are always open. And I just think it's a great school overall, for sure.
And accessibility buttons, could you like...
So like accessibility buttons, if you have the swipes, like, you know, the things that you just like swipe your hands on. I just think that that's something that would be really great for the classrooms. It's kind of hard to open a door if I don't want to get off my scooter. Like, I have days where I'm going to want to be on my scooter and I don't want to get up to walk. So I think just having a swipe or just a button to click and that door automatically opens. I don't understand why that's an issue and why you can't do that, because it's just going to make the lives of someone living with disability more independent. And there's, this whole is about independence. It's about building independence. But you can't expect a person who's disabled to live independently if you're not making things around, like around the school for them accessible in order to be independent.
Of course. And do you live on the second floor?
Okay, but I don't dorm. I commute. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from Williamsburg. I'm a New Yorker. But like, the commute here is pretty good. I mean, for the most part, I love it. I get to see the city all the time, so I know my way around the city.
I do think this is a very accessible campus.
Yeah, overall, it is. And the elevators are pretty wide. Like, I think the ones in the Bronx, they're so small. And I have to wait for so long, because I do campus here and in the Bronx. I have to wait so long to get an elevator. And sometimes the elevators are small, and I have class to get to. Literally in like 5 minutes. I have to wait like for three times for that elevator to come back, because I can't fit in the elevator, or I have to wait until it's empty just to get in. So like I said, I think buttons on doors anywhere should be a mandatory thing.
Right. So this brings us towards the end. Is there anything that you guys like learned about the other party or about yourselves in this conversation?
For me, I feel like we had a lot of the same experiences and we were able to connect on a great level. I mean, even though obviously we have our differences, able-bodied, disabled, and so many other things, but I feel like overall we were able to connect. I think that that's such a beautiful thing and that's such a great example to have. You can't go based off someone's appearance, just their personality, and you find out so many amazing things about the person. And I think I found so many amazing things about you and just having a connection. Even though there were differences in our stories, I feel like they still all tie together.
I do echo like the same sentiment. I also think I learned a lot about like, you know, the issue with like disability rights here in America, here in New York City, and just kind of like the challenges and like the daily life that you go through as a disabled person that I haven't even like begun to consider as an able-bodied person. And I think this was extremely informative for me, and it's also like very just nice talking to you in general. You're a very lovely conversationalist.
Thank you. So are you. Oh my
gosh. And is there one thing that you want our audience to take up from this lesson today?
I just think knowing how to communicate and knowing how to talk to people is so important. Just being kind and compassionate, and just knowing that everybody has feelings and everybody comes from a different background, and just like you know, everybody has a hard day and you never know what someone's dealing with. So I just think showing that compassion and getting to know someone despite their physical appearance is something that shouldn't stop you from having a conversation.
It's still, like I said, a very similar sentiment echo. Like, you should be open to communication. You should be more empathetic. You should be more understanding. People, at the end of the day, we're all just people. We're all trying to get through, like, the day. We're all just trying to get to bed. And, like, there's no real reason for you to, you know, try and, like, close yourself off or try to be, like, rude or, like, hurtful to others. Because at the end of the day, the only thing that you're going to gain is, like, nothing. And what you gain from being kind is everything.
Facts.
All right. Thank you so much, you two, for joining us. Okay, this was our podcast. I hope you really enjoyed it. How long did we record for? An hour and 30 minutes. Oops.
An hour? Oh, do you have somewhere to be?
I do.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Anyways, this was Edmund. This was Leah. Bye. Thank you so much. Bye.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways,
oh my gosh,
blooper reel. Anyways, thank you. Edmund just left, guys, and Leah's here, but thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh my
gosh.
Oh my gosh, I feel so bad.
She literally hit her face in the